we can do a little toast. Cheers.
Yes,
thank you for joining.
Cheers. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. Hello, hello. It's Brooke Tavard, and you're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. I have Darian Simone here. You're in town for the Grammys, right?
Yes. Well, yes and no. I'm in town for the Grammys, but then also I just decided to make a trip of it. So I recorded some episodes for my podcast.
Oh, cute.
Saw some people. So I feel like I made it productive.
Yes. And I love your podcast. It's called Am I Allowed to Like Anything?
Yes.
Which is an amazing name.
Thank you.
tell us a little bit more about what you do, your background, and why you, and you've been podcasting for a long time. You've had a podcast since, what, 2015?
Yeah. It's so weird because when I started my podcast, everyone was like,
what's a podcast?
Yeah, no, not even. They actually made me feel like I started it too late.
Oh, and, well, yeah.
But now looking back, I didn't.
Of course.
I started it at a great time. And now I think you still can start podcasts.
Of course.
As long as, like, I think you need to have a very specific angle and everything. And I loved it so much. I honestly loved everyone who I worked with. I worked on like a relatively diverse team, like one of the more diverse teams I've worked on in like newsrooms.
Okay.
And I just loved everyone who I worked with. But I have a lot of projects within media that I want to do and start on my own.
Okay.
And I'm very like entrepreneur minded. I'm a huge self-starter.
Was that the decision to move to LA?
That was the decision to move to LA. It was that, but also I'm from Buffalo, New York, and I've been living in the cold for so long. And quite frankly, I don't have to live this way any longer.
I know.
You know?
I just came from LA and I had the best time. The space that people have to live is just incredible. There's so much wellness stuff there too, which I really like. So there's like amazing classes, amazing healthy restaurants.
Right.
I could see the desire to want to move to LA.
Yeah, and now it's just so great because, you know, I was living in Brooklyn when I lived in New York.
Okay, where in Brooklyn were you?
I was in Crown Heights.
Crown Heights, okay.
So I loved it, but it was like, if I wanted to go to a Barry's Bootcamp or if I wanted to go to like...
Yeah. You had to travel really far.
Yeah, it's like 45 minutes, an extra 45 minutes, and now it's like I walk to Barry's.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like little stuff like that that makes your life so much easier that maybe you wouldn't think it would.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so now what I'm basically focusing on is I am working into like being more of a consultant within like the audience growth and like social media space.
So does that put pressure on you to have like a huge social following yourself?
Yeah. And like, but that's the thing is like, I'm doing that, but I'm trying to keep a lot of my literal like creative energy for my own account. So to be honest, I'm trying to grow my own account right now so
right.
that I can like share news with the people who, my friends or people just who follow me and like we have similar tastes.
Yeah.
So like that's what I'm trying to get into.
Yeah. And that's a full-time job. Like growing your following takes a lot of time.
Yeah. And like consistency.
Yes.
And it's like a whole new game. It's not like Instagram 2 or 3 years ago where you build it up and stuff.
Yeah.
So, but I'm working with Glossier right now, which I'm really excited on.
Oh my God. That's like my favorite brand.
No, they're my favorite brand.
Emily Weiss is like idol.
She is extraordinary. So they're like one of my, I work a lot with like Into the Gloss and then like Glossier social media editors on just like helping, kind of like serving as someone who is helping them to think of like new ways to grow their audiences on their platform.
Well, I've always wanted, so I actually started this podcast because of Into the Gloss.
Really?
Because I see this as almost like an audio version of looking at someone's medicine cabinet and seeing what they use and how they use it. And these were not discussions that I was finding anywhere on the podcast app. So I was like, why don't I start a podcast where I talk to women about their approach to beauty and their beauty routines? I've always wondered why they haven't had a podcast.
Me too.
And if they want one, like put in the good word for me because I would love to host a podcast for them.
Yeah, no, I feel like, and you're right, I also feel like there's just, what I love about Into the Gloss so much is they're so I work a lot with Emily Ferber.
Okay.
And when I talk to her about like, what is really the angle for ITG is it's like, yeah, it's the cool girls like medicine closet, but also they really, really don't shout out stuff that they don't use. And it's very much like, these, like, they trust their own taste, and that's what I love about them.
Yes.
And that's why, like, anyone who they put up on that site, like, I'm clicking these links.
Yes,
and I'm seeing how much these products are.
Oh my gosh.
I'm checking my bank account.
Yes. And, I mean, that's kind of a challenge for me because I'm very, like, I curate my guests. So I reach out to people that I think have an interesting point of view and that I know will have, like, some good information.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people pitch themselves to me, and it's kind of uncomfortable because I feel like people at least listen because they trust that the people I'm interviewing have a good point of view.
For sure. I feel the same way about my podcast too.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't get a lot of pitches, but it's when you're thinking about like curating your guests, especially when it's like, I wish I could call up Issa Rae to be on my podcast right now.
I just met her at Sundance. That's a moment. She's gorgeous.
Wait, so why were you in Sundance? I have to know this.
So Viacom had some presence there. So I was like, kind of working, but I also just went for professional development. So I just went to see lots of films, and I specifically went to see a lot of short documentaries, just like to see what stories people can tell in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing lots of digital content stuff for Viacom. So I was like, let me see what like the best of the best are doing in short form narrative and documentary. I felt very inspired.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I really want to start seeing more films like this upcoming year. I didn't see a lot of movies last year, and I have no idea why.
I love movies. Yes. It's so funny. After I asked you to be on the podcast, I saw we were in the same Essence article about like the 2018 like beauty resolutions. I'm going to read yours because yours really spoke to me. Okay. I'll link to the story in the show notes for everyone.
Yes.
But okay, this is your quote. Last year, I mastered the art of being intentional about my morning and evening skincare regime in terms of what I'm aiming to treat. This year, I want to find the perfect SPF for my skin and become the lip gloss queen. Also use more natural skincare products. So, okay, your skin is amazing.
Thank you.
So you took last year to say, okay, I'm going to focus on my skincare routine. Mm-hmm. And what were your learnings? Like, what did you land on?
Yeah, okay, so here's the thing I think I need to say first. I am obsessed with skincare.
Wait, first of all, how old are you? You're very young.
I'm 27. I just turned 27.
Oh, really? Yes. You look young.
Yeah, I look young.
People card you everywhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, people card me everywhere.
You look like you're 17.
Yeah, and like, especially like the long weave actually makes me look younger, whatever. I'm over it now. I'm like, this is, you know, I'm wearing my SPF. I'm not going to be looking too old for a while.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing to look really young.
Yeah. So, and like what I mean when I say obsessed is I would say the past like year and a half, I've definitely had a skincare routine. You know, like I grew up, my mom would buy me Cetaphil and she...
Cetaphil's great.
Yeah, Cetaphil is great.
Yeah.
You know, she was buying me lotions for my face, but up till recently, it wasn't even because I was having problems with my skin. I just noticed myself gravitating more towards skincare as opposed to makeup.
Yeah.
I love makeup, mm-hmm. but I think it's a lot to focus on both
for me,
especially when like you're working and you're,
of course,
yeah, you just
of
like
course.
Want clear skin.
Yeah. And skincare, I feel like, is the baseline. Like you have to have a good skincare routine before you can even get into makeup. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what I learned about my skin was it was all about really like retaining like the natural like barrier, like protection barrier of oils I have on my face already.
Yes.
So that's really just what I'm trying to do.
Yes. And a lot of people damage it by using really harsh cleansers.
Yeah.
Also over exfoliating. Everyone's obsessed with their Clarisonic spin brush and they're using it like twice a day. And it's like, no, don't do that.
I actually stopped using like beaded or like scrub cleanser.
Yeah.
And I'm transitioning now more into just using like acids or you know, like AHA, like
yes,
all of those.
AHA, and
yeah,
all that
like
stuff,
AHA.
Yeah.
So those are things like I'm taking the time this year to definitely like learn more about.
Mm-hmm.
But like basically in the morning, sometimes I wash my face in the morning, sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
Because if I, let's say like I sweat or it's just really hot, that's when I'll wash my face again in the morning. But a lot of it is about, in the morning, I just am using products because I want my skin to look bright.
Yep.
And I want to just like minimize my pores.
Yes. Okay. So how do you define good skin? Is it small pores and like that natural glow?
Yeah.
I agree.
And also something I learned about my skin too was like, so I have like combo skin and I have like definitely like a tea oil, oily T-zone.
Yeah.
I stopped putting lots of like lotions and oils on my T-zone area. And that's something I picked up from Katie Jane Hughes.
Okay. Yeah.
She's super knowledgeable on skincare and then she's a makeup artist.
Oh, cool.
And so she was talking about like, I'm not putting heavy oils where I know I'm already, you know, I have a lot of oil to begin with, and it's just going to build up during the day.
Right.
And so, and also protecting my skin during the day. So I've been like now I'm getting to this space where it's like I want to use more SPFs. I want to try them out. I want to like figure out the texture of them.
Yes.
Like people love, I know I'm already going to butcher this, La Roche. La Roche Posay.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't,
and I'm not
a fan.
Really into it.
It's for white people.
Yeah, like I think the texture of it is really grainy.
Yeah, and I think that it leaves a cast. For like the sunscreen, at least leaves a cast. I've tried their sunscreen and I was not impressed. The sunscreen that I love is from Murad. It's like a vitamin C one, and then Chantecaille makes the best sunscreen ever. It's like a sunscreen primer, but it's $100.
Oh my god!
But it's amazing.
Yeah, I actually one of my last one that I tried that I really loved. I picked up at Sephora. It's by Kane and Austin.
Okay.
And I really liked it just because it went on super sheer, and it was moisturizing.
Yeah.
I felt like honestly I didn't even need a moisturizer after putting on the SPF during the day.
Amazing.
So yeah, there's that. And then what I like at night is more about, I'll use my toner again. I used to use really harsh cleansers. I stopped doing that.
Yeah. Have you ever tried oil cleansing?
Okay. I haven't.
That's like my obsession.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you get into it?
Well, my skincare, maybe for the past like 2 years now, it's pretty much all like natural oils. Like I make all my own serums and my own moisturizers. Yeah. I don't make my own eye cream. But I just remember reading about it like years ago. I used to follow this site called Minimalist Beauty, and she wrote all about oil cleansing, and I started doing it, and it's just like a game changer.
Yeah. Okay. So when you oil cleanse, do you use a second cleanser after?
No.
Wow.
I'll do witch hazel after.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel like I need to try it, but consistently.
You should.
Okay.
I have a little gift for you when you leave of like some natural, like to make your own face masks, because that's another thing. Like I see all these like packaged masks being sold at Sephora, and I'm like, that's a bullshit product.
Yeah.
It's so easy to take like activated charcoal or bentonite clay and like mix it with apple cider vinegar or yogurt or lemon and make your own face mask, and the results are so much better than like a store-bought face mask.
You know what? I've been like thinking so much about these sheet masks and really trying to figure out if they work.
Well, okay, here's the thing. Here's my issue with the sheet masks. Half of them are Korean, which is fine. K-beauty's huge.
Yeah.
But you can't even read what is in them. Like the labels are entirely in a different language.
Right.
So people are putting this stuff on their face. They don't know what it is. It's just like a little bit dicey.
Yeah, I think that there are some that people rave about, like the Joan Vargas mask, which I have not tried.
I haven't tried it either.
But I've like heard like really great reviews about that one. But I just don't know how sustainable the effects are of a mask. Like they seem very much like something where it's like, maybe I'm going someplace and I just like need my face to look extra bright or something like that.
Yeah. But even for that, like even for brightness, like turmeric and lemon, like it's going to be hard to beat that, you know? Like all of these chemical products, these commercial products, it's like you look at the fifth ingredient and they're like, you know, 1/100th of turmeric was added to this, but you can just go straight to the source.
Right.
That's like my whole thing.
Yeah.
Which is like, I feel like the tide is slowly changing towards more natural skincare, but it's hard to find resources because the beauty industry wants you to buy products. So they're not going to tell you, you don't really need this. You can just make it yourself.
So in that, in like thinking about also like ingredients and products, that's why I've been liking The Ordinary's products. I just actually ordered like my first shipment of their stuff before. I've never used it before.
And their packaging's beautiful.
Yeah. And I like them because like they really educate you.
Yes.
Like on what these products do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really like taking the time to dig more into that.
Yeah.
So that I can really like figure, I just want to become more knowledgeable on it.
Yes.
I want to find a way to, I always tell people this, like I need to be a beauty editor in my next life or something like that.
Me too. I mean,
you know,
even though I think one of the challenges for beauty editors is because they get sent stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They're always trying different stuff.
Yeah.
And I think your skin freaks out when it's exposed to so many different products.
Yeah. Ashley Weatherford. Beauty editor at The Cut.
I know. Everyone keeps telling, I need to just reach out to her and be
you
like, can I interview
should.
You? Because she comes up all the time.
Yeah. She's been on my podcast, and what she tells me she will do is she'll like use one half of her face to try a product.
What?
Because that's like, one of the only ways where she can, where she
has
can
a
tell.
Control.
Yeah. So I think she has her own system of doing it, and it varies based on products. But that's how she'll say, like, she'll try certain products. I don't think everything, obviously, to kind of like see how they work on her already beautiful skin.
Yes. Okay. I have to go listen to her episode. One of the most amazing episodes that you did, and it's so funny how I found it. I was so fascinated. You know how you have these like Instagram girl crushes, like these people that you follow and you don't know anything about them.
Right.
But also this girl in particular is very mysterious. I was like, who is she? What's her background? It was Elise Peterson.
Yes.
And I searched her name in the podcast app to be like, has anyone talked to this woman? Because she's so fascinating. Yeah. And I know she's kind of like Solange affiliated, and she's like an amazing artist, and she's amazing style.
Right.
But I didn't know her story. Mm-hmm. And from her Instagram, you just see these fabulous pictures.
Right. You don't know her story
and
from,
then I found your interview, and I was like, I mean, she was a dominatrix working in a dungeon.
Yes.
Like, I was beyond.
Yeah, you just things that you wouldn't like know about her up front. I love Elise. I know Elise through a mutual friend that we both have.
Okay.
And her art has been like blowing up, and it's just nice to see. It's nice and just like gratifying to see people who you know like just making money from their art and getting
it.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of her.
Yeah. So how do you pick, like, is there anyone that you think is really fascinating that you'd love to interview that you haven't been able to yet?
Melina Matsoukas. Oh, I really, really want her on my podcast. And I just don't feel like it's unattainable.
Yeah. Have you reached out?
I haven't reached out to her yet. I have a solid connection, so I'm trying to like get that connection to introduce us.
Yes.
So that's what I'm working on right now. But I just really like her work. I feel like I've always followed it.
For people that don't know, even though like I'm gonna assume everyone listening is like a Beyonce stan like me, she is one of the most amazing like directors, filmmakers, and she directed most of Beyonce's like best visual work.
She did a lot of, I want to say she did most of
Lemonade.
Or all of Lemonade.
Yeah.
I just love her evolution as an artist, and she's also an example of someone who, it wasn't about getting Instagram famous.
Right.
It wasn't about being popping on social media. Like it was about her craft,
right.
Which I really, really like. And like now people are like, oh, she's popping. And like, this is her moment. This is her time.
Yeah.
And it's not, and it's because of her work. It's not because of like stuff she was trying.
She's like an it girl.
Yeah. Right. Like, and it became less about the social media following and more of like how her work spread on those platforms, like through like her voice and her tools and through her like directing.
Yeah.
So I really like her. I think she's really cool.
Ooh, okay.
My friends call me like the little Melina Matsoukas, because like whenever I'm taking photos of them, I'm like, I have a vision. Like, you need to stand right here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to take the best photos of you. Like,
that's a good friend.
Yeah. So
that's so cool.
I really like her a lot.
I'm sure that interview will happen in 2018.
Yes.
I'll look. So you're going to be in the same room as Beyonce on Sunday for the Grammys.
Yeah.
Have you met her before?
So funny story, I used to intern for her publicist, Yvette Noel Shore, and I interned at Parkwood.
You interned at Parkwood?
Yes.
I always joke that that's like the job that I need to have but like can't have, because I won't be able to detach myself from my obsession for her to like give sound strategy and advice. Like, I wouldn't be cool in meetings. So wait, you like saw her all the time then?
Yeah, she would come into the office because like, and I say that because I want people to know that like she was coming into the office and like working with people and talking with people and like being present like in that space. I went to see her all the time, obviously.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, hi, bye, hello, like obviously like being like nice and cordial and stuff. I got to watch her creative director, his name's Jenkay Tali.
Okay.
He was the one who like creative directed for and like the Run the World video.
Oh my God.
And it was really brilliant to watch him work, and also Kwesi Forjor, who still works there right now as a creative role.
Yeah, her team is just amazing.
Yeah, and it was just really cool to see the way that they like organize creativity. You know, like it's very fashion and clothes based. I loved working with Raquel and with Ty. You know, like I'm there early in the morning organizing shoes. Like it was just like those little tiny moments that I was able to take like methods of of like creative thinking. Mm-hmm. And now I don't work in fashion or in music, but I was able to like take those processes and apply them to my work still.
Yes.
And like into journalism and media in like creative ways.
That's so cool.
So it was really cool.
Yeah. I also feel like it's a really great time to be a creator because we have all of these tools to allow us to put our content out mm-hmm. that we didn't have before. And mm-hmm. the barriers to entry are pretty relatively low.
I would say so, yeah. They've been democratized.
Yeah,
so.
I do think there's a lot of hesitation, though, to put something out that's perfect from the beginning, and that's the number one thing that I say will kill your ability. Like,
I agree.
When I listen back to like my early podcast episodes, I'm like, wow, struggle. But it's you just have to put it out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. And then it gets better and better and better, but it doesn't get better if you don't put anything out at all.
Yes. So in LA now, mm-hmm. do you miss your kind of creative community in New York, or do you feel like there is that community in LA too?
I definitely miss it. I definitely miss it. I would say that I miss it. I feel like I'm starting to find more of my tribe and people mm-hmm. in LA, but it's definitely a process.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not this like not the same. Especially to me, like I love living in Brooklyn, and I think like what young people are of color are doing there is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Like the work that they're doing and like the space that they're taking up is really cool and important. And so I think I'm transitioning into finding it. But honestly, I feel like a lot of what I'm spending my time doing right now is working and making sure that I can pay my bills and then
that's real.
Yeah. And then like all in still finding a way to focus on my podcast, to focus mm-hmm. on projects and media that I want to do that aren't like bringing in revenue right now,
right.
but I want them to get to that place.
Right.
So that I don't, maybe I don't have to consult as much anymore. Yeah. I don't have to freelance on like short term or long term projects, you know?
Right.
I just knew that I had to get out of an office. And so that's what I'm working on doing.
On a more superficial note, I saw that you left your hairdresser behind in New York that you loved. And that's a very real thing. Like,
oh,
our relationship.
God.
And I actually don't have, like, a hair, because I'm wearing my hair natural. Mm-hmm. I just do it myself. How has it been finding a new hairdresser in LA? And, like, don't you miss that relationship?
I really, really miss it because, okay, first of all, shout out to Javonna Moody. If you live in Brooklyn or if you are just looking for a great weave, an amazing haircut, a great color.
Can I ask you about, well, one, I'll link to all of her information below so you guys can all find her, but I've always had a hard time with weave because I feel like I can never blend my hair with the...
That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
So, one, I think it's about the texture of the weave. I think that you can definitely find textures that will help to match your hair, but that takes research. I'm wearing Indique right now.
Oh, I know Indique. They're in Harlem, right?
Yeah, so they have a boutique shop in Soho. I don't know if they have one in Harlem too. They have different kinds of textures, even beyond like the bouncy wave or the curl. Like they have different textures of straight.
Okay.
And then something else I've been using that I feel like a lot of people just don't know about that Javonna informed me on was a Pravana smoothing treatment.
Okay.
It's specifically for natural hair that has no chemicals in it. And essentially what it just helps to do is to smooth out your curl.
Does it loosen your curls though?
It loosens your curl some, but it's basically like a better, it's not a relaxer and it's not a keratin treatment. It's more of just like a gentler way I wouldn't say loosen your curl. I think the correct term is to quite frankly loosen it.
Okay.
But why I like it is because when I flat iron my hair, it helps to blend. It helps it basically to blend more with the weave.
Right. And you probably don't have to use as much heat because you have the treatment.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's actually a good protectant too. It feels less like a chemical, like a relaxer where you're kind of damaging your hair.
Yeah.
And it feels more like a protectant and something where like it's gone in like 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
For the most part.
Okay.
And it's easy to get put back in. And so I really like having it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like my trick that I use to help to blend the weave.
And so is a weave like your go-to?
No, honestly, my weave isn't my go-to. The reason why I got my weave right before I had left by Javonna was because I didn't know what I was going to be doing with my hair in LA.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wear a lot of braids.
Okay. Oh, yes.
I'm sure
and your braids are beautiful.
Yeah. So, a woman, Sonia, in Brooklyn. She's the one who I actually found through my friend Doreen St. Felice, who is a culture writer. Yeah, so
I love her writing.
Yeah, everything she writes is so good. An extraordinary like thinker, thought leader, journalist. Found Sonia through her. So I was just, especially here where when you're someone like me who you no longer have a relaxer, but you still, I like to wear my hair straight. I just think it's really easy. Mm-hmm. I like the look of it. I haven't gotten into a space yet where I'm like fully wearing my hair natural and curly yet, but I'm getting there. So in the summer I braid my hair because I'm trying to wear it straight. It's just like, Darian just like needs to have her hair braided over the summer.
Yeah.
And so, where was I going with that? So I was braiding
my
hair.
That's your go-to.
Yeah, that's my go-to. But I just didn't know what would be happening
in
LA in terms of hair. So I was like, if I can put some of it up and protect some of it, then that will be good too. My mom also used to be a hairstylist. Well, she still is. Okay. She used to work in a salon and like.
Okay.
So she's always given me like great products that you really can't get unless.
You have the hookup.
Yeah, unless you have a license and the hookup.
Yeah.
So I haven't found anyone yet because I haven't needed to because I've had my weave.
Right.
So I'll just wash it myself, like make sure that I have like a little hood dryer to make sure that my tracks like dry all the way.
Yeah, because the mildew situation can be serious.
Yeah, and you don't want any of that.
Do you reuse your hair?
Yeah, I reuse my hair.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I had to stop doing weave. I mean, I haven't done a weave in forever, but it just became so expensive. The hair is so expensive.
Yeah, the hair is so expensive.
The installation, you have to pay for quality because you don't. Why buy nice hair if you're not going to have the best person put it in? So you paid a lot for the installation. But then the thing that I would always do is people would say, like, oh, we'll just reuse the hair. But I would put it in and then I would start cutting it. And And then when it was time to get it again, I'd be like, I don't want to use this hair. I want fresh new hair. And it becomes so expensive.
It becomes really, really expensive. And that's, I think, partially why I was like, if I'm going to have this in, quite frankly, I'm going to have this in for a few months, probably honestly a little bit longer than that, and just wash it and keep it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
are there any women that are around now, actresses, models, whatever, that you feel like are just like killing it from a beauty perspective that you just think? I know you saw Lala last night and you were like, Lala is so beautiful.
She's so beautiful. I have loved Lala Vasquez like
since the MTV
days. I just will always be an admirer of her from afar.
Yeah.
Who is someone who, let me look through my phone quickly. I take a lot of screenshots.
Yeah. Well, you should use the bookmarking tool.
Oh yeah. Why don't I do that?
Yeah. I used to do a lot of screenshots and then I was like, I can save them all in Instagram.
I would actually say that I love SZA's look.
Her
obviously
look is just
it's so natural.
How does she do her hair? I have so many questions about her hair. Like, obviously, well, we know it's not her hair.
Right,
she adds
right,
to it. That was that huge controversy.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, everyone just take a deep breath. It's fine. It's not all her hair.
Exactly.
So she must add like clip-ins. She must blow out her natural hair and then add in clip-ins that are like the exact same texture. Because it can't be a weave.
I wonder if anyone has specifically asked her about her hair. Just like a piece on how SZA does her hair in the morning.
I would love to interview her. Her whole beauty routine is just incredible.
I need to do that.
Yeah.
I really want to pull up someone else whose beauty routine, who isn't so cliche, like obviously SZA. She's amazing. You know who I think who I really like their look and I think they're really cute? Princess Nokia.
Oh, I agree.
She is phenomenal personality wise, but I like the way that she plays with lip and with freckles and with makeup, and I think she's really cute. I'm not a big lipstick girl.
Yeah.
I'm a big lip gloss girl.
Lip gloss.
So that's why when Rihanna rolled out with the lip gloss first.
The gloss bomb is the best lip gloss I've ever used in my life.
Yeah, no, me too. Me too. Yeah. And in literally anyone can use it, I think. It's like perfect for every skin tone. But yeah, I think Princess Nokia is really cute.
Yeah, she is adorable. Yeah. I want to hear a little bit more about your background and like growing up in Buffalo, New York. And how you kind of came into, like, did you ever have an awkward phase?
Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Buffalo, New York, but I specifically grew up in a suburb 10 minutes away from Buffalo called Williamsville. I lived up the street from my elementary school, and really up until middle school, I was either the only black girl in my class or there was another black boy. His name is Denzel and we're still good friends today. Or it was him. And a lot of the times, not only the only black girl, but the only girl of color.
Wow.
So
I grew up in this environment where I was, I had a lot of white friends and a lot of white teachers, mostly white teachers. I honestly think the only black, my two black teachers I've ever had were in college.
Wow.
I never had any black teachers, even while I was growing up, like
wow.
through my adolescence.
Wow. How do you think that affected your kind of sense of self and what was beautiful being surrounded by whiteness
yeah.
all the time?
Now looking back, I felt like, and the good thing about with my mom being a hairstylist mm-hmm. is she was also helping me. I grew up with relaxer like most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, because I came from this family that was like rooted in blackness, my grandma had like a soul food restaurant in the city. So I didn't feel like I was isolated from people who looked like me.
Got it.
Which I think is important. But mm-hmm. at the same time, there were times when my mom would call me out and she'd say, I heard that you said that you wanted to have hair like your white friends. I'd say things like, oh, I wish my hair was as straight as yours. Or I don't know. It was mostly hair stuff.
Yeah.
It was less of like a complexion thing. And yeah. it was less of like facial features. Yeah. And it was more of the hair.
Yeah.
That I think my mom relaxed my hair to make it easy for herself.
Right.
And a lot of black girls grew up with relaxers.
I grew up with relaxers. Yeah.
Like yeah. up until like a few years ago,
oh
we all had relaxers.
Of course. Yeah.
So it was more of that. But then I would say, as I went to public school and then I transitioned to like a private Catholic school.
Okay.
And not going to school with men, I think, is like amazing.
Yeah. I went to an all-girls school too.
Yeah. Like, wait, what's the name of this school that you and Hannah were both talking about?
Spence.
Yes.
Yeah.
This seems like a very, how do I describe it? A very like New York kind of situation.
Yes, yeah. Like that awful book series Gossip Girl is kind of based on this
really?
Scene. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think the author went to Nightingale, which is like very close to Spence, but yeah,
I
same
see. Yeah.
kind of.
So while I was there, like you, because you don't have to worry about a male gaze,
right?
Like your confidence is just
through the roof.
Yeah, like through the roof, yeah. literally. And so there, I don't know, I was like president of my class 1 year mm-hmm. and I felt like I was embraced by all different kinds of people. Mm-hmm. But I only think that was because at a young age I learned how to connect with all different kinds of people, mm-hmm. which I think is good. And to be completely transparent with you, it wasn't until I got to college that I started to really kind of pass or like notice microaggressions. Obviously I grew up around racism and,
right.
and people who viewed me in a certain
right.
way.
Right.
But I think that because of my family and just I was a nice girl, you
right.
know, I could talk to you.
Right.
It wasn't that I wasn't thinking about skin color. I obviously was.
Right.
But to me, I think at the time it was like, these are people who I literally grew up around.
Right.
Like, I grew up being the only black girl in my classes.
Right.
You know, like,
and we also didn't have the vocabulary of microaggression. So when
right,
someone asks to touch your hair, you're like, sure, you can touch my hair,
right.
Sally, or whatever. You know,
right.
you don't see it as this like offensive
you don't.
Thing.
It,
yeah.
yeah. And so I don't want it to come off as like I didn't see color or anything weird like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely now, like when I think about race and how it's used to almost like distract us from just quite frankly living our lives and being ourselves and making work that isn't a response to how other people view me, but it is a response to how I view myself.
Mm.
I have a greater sense of that, which I'm really, really grateful
yeah.
for. But a lot of like this wokeness, for a lack of a better term, I didn't have that when I was in high school. Like, to me, it was like a human thing.
Right.
And I don't mean that to like erase race or gender
right,
from the equation. But for me, it was like, yeah, I know we don't look anything alike, but I have a feeling like I can find something that we both have in common.
Of course.
And then people like Darian and I'm president of my class, or, you know, right. I'm able to just like navigate friend groups, yeah. which is kind of what I do now, is I navigate these friend groups that I have.
Yeah. So did it change in college?
It changed in college because I went to school in Boston.
Okay.
And I mean, Boston's a very white city. It's a very...
So I've heard.
Yeah. Yes. And so I was taking classes and things I actually wanted to do, which changes the game.
Yes.
You know, like doing things you actually want to do. And it was a very also hands-on school, which I loved a lot. I think it changed because I think just being in a city where I was exposed to different kinds of people. When you're living in the suburbs, well, okay, I live in my home, I get in my driveway, right. I'm in a car all day.
Right.
I'm not really exposed to other people who aren't like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just became more aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I started to think more about like race and class because yeah. I was taking those yeah. classes.
Did you seek out black friends when you got to college?
No, I didn't. I don't know why though. I think it was because I was already hanging out around a lot of white people
yeah.
to begin with, that it wasn't the first thing to come to mind.
Okay.
But I most certainly made black friends like within college. But then I also felt like I had a lot of white friends too. Like it yeah. was definitely yeah. very, I was navigating these circles that they weren't navigating because they were in their groups.
Yep.
Which is typically what people do, because sure, you find your sure. source. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm weird in that way. Now I feel like I'm overanalyzing myself. But
No. I mean, I think my friend group is certainly split. And it's actually so interesting. Even with this podcast, a lot of women, young black women, will reach out to me and be like, thank you for talking to black women. But I don't only talk to black women mm-hmm. because it's also interesting to hear about women that aren't black and their experience with beauty and their approach to beauty.
Right.
And a lot of the assumptions that we have, like one of the most surprising things has been talking to white women about their hair and all the struggles they have. I'm like, oh, what? I thought you just put it in a ponytail and kept it moving.
In a ponytail bun, yeah.
But they have all these blowouts and like they have their whole
and
thing too.
And things that they do.
So I think that there's value in having a diverse friend. And we always talk about diversity and inclusion, but I think that you will be in a good position throughout your career in media by having mm-hmm. so many different connections across racial lines. Because if you just stay in your group, it's hard to...
Yeah, no. and like sometimes you can definitely you can find ways to thrive that you can find ways to thrive that way, but only until how far. And I think very similarly about my podcast, where my podcast has mostly been black women and women of color specifically mm-hmm. within media.
Is that intentional?
It's actually the thing that tears me up inside is that it's not intentional.
Mm-hmm.
A part of it are people who I know who I think are interesting mm-hmm. and who I'm personally attracted to mm-hmm. as another black woman.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like white podcast women or men aren't being asked, so is this a podcast for white women?
Exactly.
Or, you know,
oh my God.
And so for me, it's like one of my efforts that I am really working on is I want to, from a race lens, yeah, but from a like socioeconomic level, from a job field, I want to diversify mm-hmm. my podcast in that way, because I don't know, like I want to make a podcast for the humanity, for
yes,
the humanities,
yeah.
yeah, and like I deserve to do that, even as a marginalized woman,
right? Who,
like I still deserve to do
of
that,
course.
And like my podcast doesn't have to be only black women,
yes,
but also it's something that I take pride in too, because
yes.
so I don't
yeah.
know. It's I don't know. It's something that like I work through, but I want to start having like a more diverse Rolodex, not just in race, but in other areas of life
yeah.
and in diversity of experience too.
Yes. Yes. I think it's a very interesting time. Like, I went to an all-girls school as well, and I definitely consider myself a feminist. There's a lot of backlash against white feminism
mm-hmm.
and feeling like white women aren't keeping black women specifically in mind when they talk about like the struggle. And there was this, it was a protest sign at the Women's March that got people all riled up. And it was, if it wasn't for Trump, we'd be at brunch right now. And so people were really upset, and rightfully
wow,
so, because it's
yeah.
like, okay, yeah, we've been out here marching and fighting. Like,
right.
Like, if Clinton was in office, we'd still be out here because things have not been good for a very long time.
Right.
But just that lens of like...
That literally sums it up.
Yeah, I know. And but
they
that,
would be.
But that sign speaks to a larger sentiment that I think causes that tension between Black women and this idea about white feminism.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, wow. Number one, cannot believe that I have not seen that sign. But I would even say, as someone who maybe I haven't had the same experience as another Black woman with white women,
mm-hmm.
their points are obviously without question still valid because mm-hmm. you see it play out on the internet.
Oh, of course.
And how people interact with one another.
Yeah.
And how people treat and literally speak to one another and tweet at one another
mm-hmm.
between Black women and white women and not understanding or understanding.
Yeah.
Or you know, like what does that look like and what is too much and what is not enough?
Yeah. Did you do anything for the Women's March?
I didn't. The reason why, I actually regret it. I feel like there's either one or two ways that people go. People go and
they add it to their Instagram story.
Yeah, like, oh my God, I wanted to tweet something really snarky. It was like, is the Women's March for Instagram? Or the reason why I didn't do it is because I didn't go to the one last year and I didn't go to the one this year. I didn't go to the one last year because I was covering it in the newsroom as a news curator.
Yeah.
And I didn't go this year because I essentially decided not to go. And I think a part of it was based off of like my own fear.
Hmm.
I feel like my form of like activism and just like being like educating myself socially and kind of like showing people my lens and my view of like what I stand up for. Protest has never been like physical protest.
Has never been part of that.
In marching has never been a part of that. Mm. I feel like I've tried to do it in other ways, whether it was like calling something out at work and speaking mm-hmm. to the right person about it. It took me a while to kind of come to terms with that.
Mm.
Because especially after Trayvon Martin died.
Yeah.
And George Zimmerman was found not guilty
yep.
for anything. That was a defining moment in my
Me
life.
Too.
And I think for a lot of
Me too, yeah.
like you Black were like, people.
Because our parents had always told us that the system's not fair, but the evidence was so Black and white. And then when you saw like, what? He's not going to be convicted. It was
yeah,
kind of like this.
I think for a lot of like Black people who maybe like you're not exposed to police brutality or know people who have,
right.
which I haven't. I knew it, but that to me was the first time where it was being exposed in media for a time where we were aware
mm-hmm.
around. You know,
yes, yeah.
This wasn't like when the LA riots happened. I was maybe zero.
Yeah,
I was like maybe 5 months or so.
Yeah.
So for me, and also I feel like I do it through my work too.
Mm.
Even as a Black woman working in media who is like helping to spread information in what I want to be a very like clear way, I think that there's also a way that I think that by being a Black woman who has worked in newsrooms and also someone who's like helping to influence how other people are consuming information,
mm-hmm.
that's like an important role that mm-hmm. I have through my experience as a Black woman.
Of course, of course.
Someone who's like traditionally not, there are not enough of us in newsrooms.
Yes, and we're not part of those conversations. So just
yeah.
being there and like being there alone is a form of protest and a form of like radicalism because you're making your voice heard.
Yeah, and so... And so with that being said, I wish I would have went to the Women's March to protest and to kind of get out of my comfort zone in that way. And I think I should have done it. But also at the same time, I'm not beating myself up for not doing it. Did you go? You went to the Women's March?
I didn't go.
Okay.
I was at Sundance.
Oh, okay.
I was at Sundance. I
heard they had like a small one at Sundance.
They did like a small one there. I saw a Gloria Allred documentary that day. And she's like...
Yeah.
Very women's rights oriented. You know, I've never gone to one of the like women's marches. Maybe next year we can go.
I know.
I
understand why there are women who, particularly Black women, who don't go.
Yeah.
I feel like there's someone who I haven't met her personally, but we like follow each other on Instagram, Kimberly Drew.
Okay.
Museum Mammy.
Yeah.
And she had a really great post just about, I feel like I should kind of bring it up right now and just give you a little quote, because I don't want to misquote her.
Yeah,
and
I remember the post about how she felt like she wasn't physically and emotionally able to be there, but she was with them in spirit. But yes, please read her post.
Because I just don't want to get her words wrong, and I think they're really good. She goes, last year I did in March, I boarded a plane to Cuba. A mix of anxiety and exhaustion made me terrified, wondering if my body could handle the women's march. And that's what specifically, like, some women do it for that reason as well. And like Kimberly's protest looks different, right? Than mine and from the women who marched that day.
Yeah.
And so when I saw that, it was affirming, because it made me feel like, right, this isn't my performance. Like, this isn't the way that I would like to do it. But also, I think I should, knowing me, also push myself a little bit out of my comfort zone and maybe do it. Or maybe another kind of march.
Yeah.
You know? I just think that I can't use, for me specifically, I'm talking specifically about myself, I'm really careful not to use self-care as an excuse for the things I'm just afraid to do.
Oh, apps. Can you speak a little bit more on that? Because that is a word.
Yeah, like for me, I'm going to repeat it again. I don't use self-care as a means to not do the things I'm afraid to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a good example. I put myself through a lot in a day. I freelance, I'm working on my podcast, I have like a relationship that I, like all of these different parts of my life that I am trying to manage. I also want to work out and I want to eat well.
Yeah.
And I have friends whose texts I don't want to ignore.
Right.
And let's say that there is a book reading that night that like I really want to go to, but I am using maybe the fact that I am super tired to, maybe that's a bad example.
No, listen, I know exactly what you mean, because what I see is people with the covers over them on a couch watching Netflix, eating carbs, being like hashtag self-care. That's self-care.
Yeah.
That's not self-care. That's
maybe
just
a day of that, but
yes, and we all know when we need to relax, but I agree with you that some people have been leaning on self-care to avoid doing what's actually ultimately best for them.
Yes.
Like, so when you're feeling crappy, that's when you should be going to the gym the most, or making a green smoothie or whatever.
Right, and like I think that's like a good example in the way of like you're using self-care as an excuse for not being productive.
Exactly.
At least for me. Like, I'm someone who I'm like highly functional, right? Mm-hmm. I want to be very productive throughout my day. Mm-hmm. And I can't always, it's almost like you use self-care as a way to not make yourself feel bad about all the Netflix that you watch. Or maybe you shouldn't have, or maybe you should have. Like, right. I think it all is based on context, but being aware of that context, I think, is really important.
Yeah, I agree.
And I just don't want to use self-care as a way for me to not get stuff done.
I agree.
Like, there's a lot of hard choices I know I'm going to have to make within the next year, 2 years. Mm-hmm. And self-care, it cannot be all of the reasons for the, cannot be all the excuses.
I couldn't agree more.
That's just my big thing. That's just my thing about it.
No, I think that's such a good point. I'm so happy you brought that up. Okay, so talk to me a little bit about the beauty products that you're absolutely in love and obsessed with and that you can't live without.
So obviously I put some thought into this because I wanted to come prepared.
Yes.
All three are skincare products.
Okay.
I thought about doing makeup, but then I was like, I'm just going to commit to the skincare.
Okay.
What I've been using recently, I found out about them. They're a classic brand, Erno Laszlo.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. I got a sample of their stuff once and it's insane.
Yeah. Their stuff is really, really good. I kind of like found out about them. They've been around for a while through Violet Gray Violet.
Oh yeah.
That site, that like very, very upper echelon site. But they have a they call it light controlling lotion, and it's a toner.
Yes.
And when I put that, there was a point in time where all I was doing in the morning was slathering that stuff on my skin. And then I was just putting on my SPF, and then I was just using like the Glossier Priming Moisturizer,
okay,
mixing it with a little of Laura Mercer's, like, it's like a very shimmery primer,
okay,
and just putting it on my face, and like the toner just keeps your skin even and glowing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I forgot about that product, and it makes your pores really small too.
It makes your really small. The smell is a little hard to get used to. It's very perfumey,
yeah,
at first, but I'm used to it now and I absolutely love it. Okay. And I think it's gonna be a product that like I always use now.
It's expensive though.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's like $50 or something like that.
Yeah,
but
it's worth it.
It's worth it. Okay. It's like, it's my splurge for sure.
Okay.
Another product, this is more of something that I've been using probably for a year, I would say like a year and a half, so it lasts long. It's by Caudalie, and it's an overnight detox night oil. And so it's just like a good repair. It's a really nice, like, not too greasy oil.
Okay.
And so let's say I was especially using it. There was a point in time where I was using retinol.
Yes, so, which can be super drying for your skin.
Very, very drying for your skin. So at night I was like slathering the Caudalie detox oil on my face, and then I was putting my primer on, or I was putting my moisturizer on.
After that, okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to challenge you on that one. We can Google it together. Let's figure out what the ingredients are, and I bet you could make that nighttime oil yourself.
I know. I had recently, it's plant-based too.
Of course. So I'm sure it's like rosehip oil and like all the stuff that you can buy.
Exactly. And then this is a new product from a brand that I recently found out about. Have you heard of Beauty Pie?
No.
Okay.
Ooh, Beauty Pie, okay.
Beauty Pie, and this is really what I think we're going to start to see more of. Beauty Pie is a platform in which you pay anywhere from $10 to $20 for a membership.
Yeah.
And what they do is they give you an allowance per month that you can... that you can basically use to buy discounted products at that discounted price.
Interesting.
So let's say what they do is they're kind of like an Everlane. They cut out the middleman.
Yeah, okay.
And so they're able to sell their products really
fascinating.
Cheaply from the same like manufacturers or labs where like these really expensive brands that we use all the time come from. And it's perfect for me, someone who is like, I want to try new stuff, but I'm on a budget.
Right.
So let's say there is a lotion, like a face lotion that's allegedly like $130. They're selling it to me for $20.
Got it.
But in my allowance, it's taking out the $130.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
But so you pay a membership fee.
Yeah.
And then you get, through that membership fee, you get access to these discounted products.
Right.
So how much is the membership fee?
So the membership fee is $10. So you get like $100, or for 15, you get $150 a month, or for 20, you get $200 a month.
Got it.
And then they give you like an extra $100 at the very start.
Wow.
So that's like $200 to start off with. So I bought a new cleanser that I'm loving.
This is a brilliant idea.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And so I've started to use, it's like an anti-aging moisturizer. I was like,
because you so need that.
Right.
I mean, isn't it crazy that as women in our 20s we're like, so I'm using this anti-aging.
Yeah. And a part of me was like, my thing is, I'm definitely someone who was like, if I can just maintain what I have now, then anti-aging won't be a thing. I more bought it because I really needed a new moisturizer.
Yeah.
They were branding it as anti-aging. So I was like, and it's cheap. And I just got this.
Yeah.
So that's why I bought it. I end up really liking it. I love it because it looks like a very rich moisturizer.
Yeah.
But it goes on. It absorbs very quickly.
It sinks in.
That's my
number one like pet peeve, when you get something that just sits on top of your skin and it doesn't like...
You
need to sink it.
And
yeah.
So I was actually quite impressed with the product. And so that's my new lotion that I've been loving so far.
Okay. All great skincare tips. And Beauty Pie sounds so interesting. I'll definitely
check that out. Yeah, you should definitely. I think it's like based in the UK or something like that.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Okay. Now to transition to the negative. What are some of the beauty trends that you do not want to see continued into 2018? Which is tough because...
I think we've gone too far with the highlighter.
I agree.
I think that...
No, I agree.
Because
it used to be that everyone hated like the over contouring, but now highlighter is just getting a little too much.
Yeah, like I don't know. Like if I want personally and also it's just my everyday makeup, I want my highlighter to look very, very natural.
Absolutely.
Like, what I actually do a lot of the time, like my main kind of primers that I use,
yeah,
is Makeup Forever has basically like a clear hydrating one.
Okay.
I'll mix it with the Laura Mercer like shimmery one, and I'll honestly just like, it's so light that I actually just put it all over my face. Yeah, and then like when I take photos, it ends up just popping right here to begin with.
Right, because that's where that's like the highest point of your face anyway.
Yeah. So like, I don't even really go like that.
Well,
like,
people want you to see their highlight from across the room.
Right. And I'm just over it. Like, it doesn't look natural. I don't think it looks cute. And I just don't want, I don't want anything to do with it.
So I'm guessing you don't have Rihanna's trophy wife.
No, I don't. And like, and I honestly don't want it because I just don't have an, I think I may want it for like memorabilia.
Yeah.
But I really don't, it's just does not appeal to me for some reason.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Mm-hmm. Any other beauty trends that you think just need to retire?
I would say, I mean, this is more of like for the kids, and I think they're really creative. And it's an older trend, but the squiggly eyebrows.
Yeah.
Especially as someone who is like,
And your eyebrows are gorgeous. You have beautiful eyebrows. Thank
you. You know, like, and it's like, I'm really into the eyebrows, and I'm always like looking at other girls' eyebrows. Yeah. I'm like, ooh, could I try that eyebrow look, whatever? Yeah. That one is like a funny one, but also the teens were like legit doing videos of it on Instagram, and I was like, bless y'all.
I know.
I'm gonna be happy when you're out of this phase of your life.
You know what's interesting about it though? I think, and we're, you know, close in age, mm-hmm. I think that we approach beauty as a way to like look good and enhance what we naturally have.
Yeah.
And maybe the younger generation is looking at it less of let me look pretty and more about self-expression.
I think you're right.
You know,
which is really cool.
That's not pretty by any, like, no one would look at a squiggle brow and be like, gorgeous,
yeah,
stunning,
you fine,
slay.
Girl, yeah.
It's like, it's kind of like this, like using your face as a palette. I don't know. There's something about that's kind
so
of interesting.
True. And like, also I feel like you hear of the teens who are like using their eyelids to paint photos and,
yes,
and looks. And yeah. I think that must be what it is too. I never thought of it that way, but that's so true.
Yeah. The younger generation is just very cool.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I wish I was a teenager now.
I do too. Like I went to this Freeform, which is like the parent network. I think it's online, maybe of ABC.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Yara
Shahidi. Yeah.
What's the name of her show?
Blackish. Grownish.
Grownish.
Yeah.
And she was the most articulate, most poppin' person on the panel.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how?
Yeah.
What was I doing at 17, 18, 16?
The youth, the children.
Yeah. Anyways, I love them. Like, I'm such a huge, like, cheerleader for teens and them kind of just, like, discovering who they are.
Yeah.
And I think they should keep their quirks about them.
Yeah. And also, like, young boys are also so different now. Like, they all have, like, pink-colored dreads and, like, they're
right,
just...
Right, right.
Gender, everything's much more gender fluid. Mm-hmm. They're like trying new things. The tattoos on the face really do scare me. We have TRLs back in our building, and yeah. There was a rapper last week called Lil Xan.
Yeah, Lil Xan. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. I did not know who he was. Mm-hmm. Just like he's 16, like tattoos all over his face. And I'm like, that's
interesting.
Not gonna age well.
Yeah, and then that too. And what does tattooing your face do to your face?
Exactly, because those chemicals have to like sink in somehow. It's kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anything else that you're not a fan of?
No, I think that's really it. But everything else, I'm definitely, that I may not be doing to my face, I'm intrigued by for sure.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like I have my own appreciation for the stuff that even I wouldn't do or try.
Yeah. What about all of the, like, speaking of anti-aging, like the fillers and the Botox and the, you're only 27, but have you thought about any of that stuff yet?
You know what?
You don't need anything, by the way.
I've been thinking about it recently, not for myself, but because I've been noticing it more on social media, and I think also because I've been living in LA where it's...
Oh, my... In LA, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about it more. I definitely don't need Botox, and I'm not, like, into doing that. And I don't need lip... I have big lips. I used to get made fun of for my lips when I... You know what I mean?
And now it's the thing.
And now it's a thing.
Yeah.
So there's not really anything I would do. I would say... I actually talked about this on my podcast with Andre Singleton,
okay,
who's the co-founder of Very Black. And so we were talking about if we would get plastic surgery. And I would definitely get a breast reduction.
Really?
That's what I would definitely do. And what I plan on doing. Oh,
really? Okay, what cup size are you?
I'm a D. I'm a 36D. And
you want them smaller?
And I want them smaller or, like, lifted. I don't know. Just, like, something. I just want to be able to, like, wear shirts without bras, which technically I could do now, but it doesn't feel good.
I can do that. Trust me. It's not all it's cracked up to be. It's not all it's cracked up to be. Like, it's so interesting to me because all I want is to be able to fill out a dress and have cleavage, and I'm like over here rocking A's.
Yeah.
And you want, so would you go down to like a B, or you want to be like a C?
I don't know yet. I'd have to really figure it out. I haven't done a whole lot of research yet, but what I have committed to doing, I was talking about this also with my friends, is they were like, while I have them, I'm definitely going to embrace them.
Exactly. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I feel like now I'm also getting into this phase where I'm showing my breasts more often.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. I just feel
swag.
Like,
I like that.
Yeah. Like I am. And I think it's more of a thing where like I'm coming into my sexuality more.
Yeah.
I'm coming into like my body more. Like a lot, even what I'm wearing now is very like, you can't really tell that I have like I have breasts, and like a lot of times like I just wear stuff that fits in a way where you don't go like, wow, like Darian has big boobs, but like that's not something people think about me,
right?
And then I wear something randomly and people are like,
whoa, you like unleash them.
Yeah. So I'm trying to have more of those moments because why not?
Yeah, of course. It's like that's how you were born with this like blessing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you might as well. But I know also a lot of people have back problems related. Like
exactly,
it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah, yeah. Like I actually have some friends who have gotten that surgery done due to back problems. Mm. So there's that too.
Yeah.
Me, it's just for vanity.
just for the look.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the look. Okay, this is my final question for you.
Okay.
And you can take some time to think about it if you mm-hmm. would like to, but when do you feel the most beautiful?
I feel the most beautiful after I've stepped out the shower and I like have a towel around me and I walk out of my bathroom and I look at my vanity. My toilet and my shower are separate. I have a separate counter for my bath, for my where I get ready in the morning, where mm-hmm. my faucet is, and where I just turn and I look at myself and I'm just so proud and like happy of the woman I've become, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like you don't have on any makeup,
yeah.
you have a towel wrapped around you, I'm looking bright, I mean it looks like I've been taking care of my skin,
yeah,
and just to know that like at least that day I've committed to myself into getting up, into being productive, into like serving in whatever capacity it is that day.
That's a very beautiful, vivid description. I like feel beautiful listening to it. Well, this was so much fun. Cheers to you. It's so
yes,
great to meet you.
So great to meet you too. And thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for sharing and being so candid. I really appreciate it. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening.